Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been almost 2 weeks since Thanksgiving, and COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are still spreading across Illinois. Yesterday, Governor J.B. Pritzker said statewide, 3 in 4 hospital beds are in use, and Illinois is now averaging 152 deaths per day. That's an average of 35 more deaths per day than the worst rate in the spring. And the governor and experts are worried about a potential surge within the surge on account of the holidays. Here is Governor Pritzker yesterday.
We're now in our 11th day since Thanksgiving, and we are 4 days out from Hanukkah and 18 days from Christmas, 19 days from Kwanzaa, 24 from New Year's Eve. These next 4 weeks may be the most crucial month of this entire pandemic. We quite literally have very limited leeway in our hospital systems to manage another surge. So mask up, keep your distance, and plan smaller, more intimate holidays this year. Let's give each other the greatest gift of all this holiday season, good health and a bright future.
Joining us now are three leaders from public health departments across Illinois. Amy Fox is administrator of the Tazewell County Health Department. Hello, Amy. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Glad to
Brandy,
be here.
Well, thanks for being here. Brandy Binkley is the public health administrator for the Macon County Health Department. Hello, Brandy. Welcome to you as well.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Jessica McKnight is administrator of the McLean County Health Department. Jessica, thank you for being here on the 21st.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Listeners, we invite you to join our conversation. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. If you have a COVID-19 question for our panel of public health administrators from three different counties across Illinois, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. So, Amy from Tazewell County, I want to start with you. I'd like to hear your reaction to the governor's comments. How worried are you about the holidays?
Well, I think we have all been waiting to see how our cases are trending. In Tazewell County, we have had the last several weeks where we have continued to see an uptick in cases. The uptick in cases requires our contact tracers to work even harder than they have been to try and reach folks to quarantine and isolate them as appropriate. So I think his comments are ones that are true to those in counties. We're waiting and we're watching.
I wonder, can you share some of the latest numbers in your county, Amy? How is it looking so far?
Well, actually I can. In our county, we have 7,843 cases. We have a number of deaths. We have in this past week had 20 that have passed. The week before there were 16. I think the week before that there was slightly less. So we are seeing the number of deaths increasing in our county. We're also seeing a move. Initially, there were a lot of people who passed that were in long-term care facilities, and we're seeing actually more that are still at home that have passed, and some younger folks as well. So when I say younger, I'm talking in their 50s. I think that, again, those trends are not going in the direction that we are hoping for, at least for any of us, really.
Yeah. Jessica McKnight, how about in McLean County? How are the numbers looking there?
We are today at a total of 9,445 cases. We've, you know, consistently been averaging at least 100 new cases a day. So we are definitely experiencing that surge that is being seen across the state. And as far as, you know, severity of illness, we've seen our hospitals here consistently being pretty full. Today is 77% of ICU beds and 91% of our total beds in use. And, you know, just since the beginning of November, we've reported out, I believe, over 20 deaths. So that just goes to show, you know, what why we're trying to prevent that surge. Because when we have more cases, we know that what follows a surge is usually increased hospitalizations and increased deaths.
But those are lagging indicators, as I understand, right? You get the cases first, and then it takes some time after that, and then you start seeing people go into the hospital, and then after that, the deaths come, because people can linger for a while with this illness in some cases.
Yes, that's exactly right. And yeah, that's, you know, why we're looking at, you know, 2 weeks out from Thanksgiving to be kind of the indicator of what we'll see in cases. But then the time following that, we're just beginning to enter the flu season, where we normally do see an increase in hospitalizations related to flu and pneumonia. So, you know, added COVID hospitalizations on top of that, that's definitely concerning.
Brandy Binkley, what about in Macon County? How are things looking there?
Well, as of yesterday's release that went out to the public, we had a total of 7,081 confirmed cases and 29 Macon County residents hospitalized. And unfortunately, we had a total of 143 deaths of Macon County residents with COVID-19, which is a pretty high number and very concerning. One of the things that we've noticed here within about the past week or so is that we have seen a decrease in our numbers and positivity rate. Unfortunately, we still continue to report several deaths per week. And, I think we've been looking at, why are the numbers going down? How is our positivity rate going down? Is it compliance, or is it just the fact that, yes, there have been less people being tested? Yes, there's been a delay in some of those results. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens with that. I want to be hopeful about it, and I don't want to do, you know, some of the fear mongering that I think sometimes we're accused of doing in public health with this pandemic. But I think we all know that there's going to be, you know, a surge with the gathering from the holidays, and we are fully expecting that to happen. Our positivity rate was over 17% at one point. It has gone down, but, you know, that is not good. And so we want to make sure that we don't let people have that false sense of security, that they can let their guard down and stop following public health guidance. So maybe this means something good, but unfortunately, I think that we're probably just waiting for those numbers to surge again.
And I'm sorry if you said this, did you mention how is the hospitalization rate? The governor, as I said earlier, mentioned 3 in 4 hospital beds are filled. Staffed hospital beds are filled statewide. How is it in Macon County right now, as in terms of capacity there?
So right now we have 29 residents hospitalized. However, our hospitals do serve a significant amount of communities around us that are not in Macon County. So we do get reportable numbers out, you know, to the community from those hospitals. However, what we keep focusing around is we have good capacity at the hospitals, and, you know, they have constantly been assessing and updating the amount of, you know, beds that they have, the amount of space that they have in order to allow to take care of everyone that needs the care. However, I think we all know that there's been a nursing shortage before the pandemic. So right now we're certainly dealing with making sure that it's not only a bed we have here in our community and, you know, throughout our state and nation, but also that there's enough healthcare workers to take care of the patients in those beds. And of course, as there's more community spread, more healthcare workers are sick, more of their family members are sick, which then has them at home as well. So that's what we kind of continue to try to make sure the community understands. Yes, our hospitals have excellent, you know, capacity, and they've been growing it throughout this local response, but we also have got to have those healthcare workers. And not only are some of them getting sick, but some are getting burnt out. Some have left, you know, the career field because of their experience and the trauma that has come with, you know, COVID-19. So, you know, we can't create health workers. We can't create, you know, nurses this quickly. You know, there have been measures that have been taken by the state in order to, you know, grow that number, but there have to be healthcare workers, or I think I heard a quote somewhere that said, otherwise hospital beds are pretty much hotel beds.
Yeah, that's a good point. Amy, how about you? Is that either on the capacity side, physical capacity or personnel capacity for hospital workers? Is that a concern in Tazewell County?
Yes, I think that we're seeing, you know, very same thing that Brandy is seeing. We know that our ICU capacity, 20% is kind of the marker that they're wanting to look at. And for our region, which is region 2, there have been a number of days, I think it's been 6 or 7 now, where the surge capacity has been below 20% on intensive care beds, and that's very concerning. I think we also are hearing some of the very same things about the capacity of the health system to have workers available for staffing general med-surg beds and ICU capacity beds.
And Jessica, I don't know if anything is different there, or is it the same story in McLean County, basically?
Yeah, it's the same story. I'm echoing what they're talking about with the concern for our healthcare workers. In, you know, oftentimes when we're looking at, you know, surge in a hospital, you're looking at a disaster, you know, an earthquake, a tornado, and you have those resources from, you know, regionally or across the state or even other states that you can pull from. And what we're seeing with COVID is the severity and, you know, the increased hospitalizations, it's something that everyone is dealing with right now. And so there's not necessarily that resource. And like Brandy said, we have a limited number of resources when it comes to healthcare personnel. So that's something that we hope that the public keeps in mind whenever, you know, we're asking them to take personal precautions and personal responsibilities, is that our healthcare workers, they need us to be doing that in the community.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with public health administrators from Tazewell, Macon, and McLean counties. Our number is 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. If you have a COVID-19 question for our panel of public health administrators, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Amy, I want to ask you, Amy Fox from Tazewell County, how is testing access in your county? Is that running into issues? Are there long? We've seen reports of long lines of cars, sometimes out of the parking lot, out into the street in some parts of the state. Is that what does that look like in your area?
Testing capacity has been pretty good so far in our area. There was some changes in this past week with the potential for quarantine to be reduced with tests. I think the new concern is going to be the ability for people who are not symptomatic to get tests. I think that may stress the system, but I believe that for those who are symptomatic, there is a variety of testing services available. Really, I think it's more lab capacity that is somewhat the issue, and that it's taking, in some instances, you know, 4, 5, and 6 days to get results back on from some certain testing facilities. And so that delays contact tracing, that delays the person being notified that they were a positive case, et cetera. So I don't think it's necessarily the physical test as much as it is lab capacity and turnaround.
Okay. And Brandy, same question to you, or if it's basically the same story, I can move on and ask you what should happen after people get tested in terms of quarantining or isolating, and what is the latest guidance on that?
I'd be happy to answer that. So, you know, testing has definitely grown here. So we have a good amount of testing currently available, and we do have the ability here locally to significantly increase the amount of testing offered pretty quickly. We have an FQHC partner here who has been, you know, wonderful about making sure that testing is available. So as far as what people should do after they are tested, they should quarantine after they test until they receive a test result. That's something we try to educate the community on as much as possible, because we certainly have people that are frustrated if they can't get their results back very quickly. And then they have the story or the argument that they exposed X amount of people, you know, during that time while waiting. So we really do want the public to know and understand that they should be quarantining until they do get those test results. Of course, if they're a close contact, they should be quarantined anyways. And so I think even if someone's just going to get tested because they're symptomatic, even if they were not a known close contact, they should take that quarantine as well.
And Jessica, I want to ask you, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but about contact tracing. I heard an interview recently in which someone said contact tracing is paper towels. It works on your kitchen counter, but it's not good for an oil spill washing up on the beach, right? Tens or hundreds of cases maybe you can contact trace, but not thousands or hundreds of thousands as we have in Illinois right now. Is contact tracing something that your county is still trying to do? Do you feel like you have the resources you need for that?
So yeah, we're still doing that because it is a very useful tool in helping to prevent disease transmission, further spread, but like you're saying that, contact tracing is best and most useful whenever it can be done very quickly and to identify that positive individual and their close contacts. And, you know, just with the sheer volume of cases and the, community spread that we're seeing, it does become difficult. And I think Amy mentioned it, when it's several days from when someone tests till they get their result, there's some time in there where potentially others have been exposed. So, I do a lot of times encourage our community to focus upstream and help us, control the spread by our actions. And so instead of waiting until you're positive and now we're trying to control that oil spill, mm-hmm. we're figuring out, how do we just prevent and all of us treat one another as if we're positive so that we can, even if
okay,
you are
we're
positive,
gonna, we're going to have to take a quick break there, and we will come back and continue this conversation in just a moment. This is the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking at the start of our show today with three public health leaders from public health departments across Illinois. Amy Fox is administrator of the Tazewell County Health Department. We're also speaking with Brandi Binkley, who's public health administrator for the Macon County Health Department. And Jessica McKnight is administrator of the McLean County Health Department. Listeners, we want to invite you into our conversation. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455 if you have a question about COVID-19 for one of our public health administrators. 800-222-9455. I want to go now to line one. Ken in Taylorville, thanks for calling the 21st. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, what do you do when you live in a county that does not follow IDPH guidelines, where bars, restaurants, and other businesses are open? As a county health department, what can you do?
Okay, thank you for that question. I think I'll maybe direct that to Brandi, since your county is is closer to Taylorville, not Christian County, obviously. But have you... if you want to respond to Ken's question or just talk in general about, how businesses are doing complying with the restrictions in your area?
So we had had a complaint process set up since the beginning of this. If there were businesses that were non-compliant of what we could do, our first step is always to provide education first to ensure that the business knows the criteria they should be following. There's been a lot of change throughout this pandemic response. So we do want to make sure that they understand the rules that they are being held to before there's any kind of additional steps taken. After or when we would receive a second complaint regarding a business, we would go out and do an on-site observation to see if that violation could be confirmed or not. Again, we provide the education, inform them that we've seen, verification of a violation and what the next steps would be. Following that, our third step, would be to issue a cease and desist order if it is a type of business over which we have jurisdiction. So if it's a restaurant or some type of, tanning or tattoo parlor, something like that, where we do have a license with that business, we can issue a cease and desist order. If they continue to, participate in the behavior that got them the cease and desist order, then now we have increased our enforcement measures just recently to where we will suspend a food permit if and when appropriate. So that would be a situation where if a business is continuing to violate and they are choosing to be, negligent, non-compliant, and they are presenting a public health hazard, then we could go in and suspend a food permit and try to get them compliant so that we could get them back open. Now, one thing that's important to note is that health departments do have limited enforcement measures. And of course, there are steps that would have to be taken specifically by local law enforcement and state's attorney's offices. And that is differing throughout the state based on how that specific county wants to implement any measures or doesn't want to. So there are definitely a point where we can kind of just say, we've done everything as a health department that we can. We've done our due diligence. And after this, there's nothing that we can do.
Yeah. And if you don't get the cooperation from the state's attorney, from the sheriffs, and we've seen some sheriffs and state's attorneys, as you indicate, say they're not going to enforce those restrictions, then you're sort of at the end of what you have the authority to do, right?
Yes. And luckily, I think we've gotten a lot of compliance, and even more since we did implement additional measures, and our city has implemented some additional measures as well. So, you know, our point is never to close a business down. We just want them to be compliant and try to prevent that spread of illness and save lives. So we want to do everything that we can to get them compliant before we would ever, you know, issue a cease and desist or suspend a food permit.
Okay, I want to take another call now. Cheryl on line 2 in Bloomington. You're on the 21st. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. I was calling to ask, what is a person to do if they went to have their testing done? My husband and I went to the Interstate Center to have our testing done, and it was completed, and it took 10 days for us to get our results. Now, within that 10 days, we had doctor's appointments to go to. And you mentioned that we should have quarantined. That's kind of hard to do with a 10-day turnaround.
Okay, Cheryl, thank you for that call. Jessica, I wonder if you can talk about Cheryl's question there about turnaround time in testing and what people should do in some places it does seem to take a long time to get those results back.
Sure, yeah, and I know that the testing site out of the Interstate Center, it's run by a private lab, Reditus, and they should have hopefully provided a phone number that you can call if you have not gotten your results. They've also implemented an online registration, so you can after you've registered and you're waiting on your test results, you can log back in to look at those results. And I think sometimes those come faster than the phone call, so you could always check online if you've gone to that site. But again, calling the facility that has done your testing to check in on those results, because, you know, the health department, we may not always have those at that time. So the health department may not be the place to go to get the results, because we'll get them once they've gone to the state.
Okay. And another call, Mark on line 1 from Peoria. Thanks for calling in, Mark. What's your question?
First, my compliments for a wonderful program. It's very helpful.
Thank you.
My question is, what are your guess estimate of the overall infection rate in the central Illinois population?
Okay. Well, thank you for that. 1%,
2%, 3%.
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. Mark, since you're in Peoria, that's near Tazewell County. Amy, I'm gonna ask you if you have a sense of what the overall infection rate is in central Illinois, possibly. Although I understand you may be most familiar with Tazewell County.
Well, thanks for the question, Mark. I can tell you a few things. I'm not going to be able to directly answer your question without probably doing some math, and I don't think you want to hear my calculator. I can tell you in the Tri-County area, so the county that you live in, Peoria, Tazewell and Woodford, we work very closely together as a Tri-County unit. There have been 20,000, just a little over 20,000 positive cases confirmed for that area. We know that a lot of times there are asymptomatic positive people and others who just choose not to go for testing. So there is a number, there is a multiplier that is out there that you know, for every test, there's probably another 3 that are in that total number as well. But I can tell you 20,000 we have confirmed and test results confirmed for in the Tri-County area. So I can at least give you that much information. So that is a very low percentage when you look at the overall population. However, you know, it is concerning in that we don't always know all cases. And there is a very rapid ability of this virus to spread. Many times when we're talking to families who are maybe have one person who is a positive case, not in isolation. We're hearing these stories of how rapidly it goes through their own home when they're when they know there's a positive person, they're taking precautions. So there is that ability for this to transmit in a pretty hearty fashion as well.
Yeah. And like you said, possibly three times as more. Certainly earlier in the pandemic, I think we were hearing estimates that it could be an even higher multiplier, but that's when testing was less available than it is now. We need to wrap this conversation soon, but I don't want to end it before talking about the light at the end of the tunnel, which is vaccines. They're supposed to start being delivered possibly this month if they get all the approvals necessary from federal regulators. State officials are expecting an initial shipment of 109,000 doses by next week. There's a list of 50 counties that are first on the distribution list. Macon County and Tazewell County, but not McLean, are on there. Brandy, I wonder, any indications of exactly how many doses you'll be receiving in Macon County and what preparations you're making for distributing them?
We do not have our exact allocation yet, but what I can say is, yes, we are definitely planning on distribution. We have been, you know, since the beginning of this, and public health departments plan for mass vaccination far before there was ever a pandemic. We did it before during H1N1. We've had practice drills almost every year for this, just to be prepared for if a situation like this occurred. So yes, definitely there are plans in place. I think it's important for the public to know, no matter how many we get, especially in this first shipment or the initial subsequent shipments, is that we do have to follow and will be following guidelines that distinguish who would be getting the vaccine first based on prioritization. If you were around during H1N1, there were priorities at that time too. We communicate those to the public, but I think it's important that the public understands, you know, very few people will be vaccinated in this first, you know, shipment that does come out, because we will only get a certain amount and those are going to be specifically used for a certain, you know, group of people. So I think that we all have to just continue to be very, very patient and, you know, plan for, you know, getting that vaccination, but also continuing to follow all that public health guidance to prevent the spread. And so we're keeping ourselves and others safe, even though there is, you know, the start of vaccine implementation.
Yeah, healthcare workers are going to be first up, I think, in this first round of vaccines. People like me, who are fortunate enough to be able to work from home, reasonably healthy, middle-aged person, probably not going to be anywhere near the front of the line, more towards the back of the line, as I should be. Last question I'm going to ask to Jessica. McLean County is not on that list of the first 50 counties to receive a vaccine. What have you been hearing? How are you preparing there?
I was still preparing in the same ways. You know, that first shipment that is to go to the 50 counties, we're anticipating that an additional shipment will follow very quickly after. So we're preparing to, get some numbers of our healthcare providers, and so that we can quickly distribute to them. Because like you said, medical care providers, our hospitals, that's where we're going to focus on getting that vaccine out quickly too.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. I want to thank Jessica McKnight, Administrator of the McLean County Health Department, Brandy Binkley, Public Health Administrator for the Macon County Health Department, and Amy Fox, Tazewell County Health Department Administrator. This has been an interesting and informative conversation. Thank you all so much for being here and sharing your time with us on the 21st.
Thank you.